Psycho Man.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to episode 439 of the Motorcycle Man podcast and another interview. Hope you enjoy this one. Our good friend Z Traveler is here in the V-Twin Cafe with me, and she is here to tell us all about her trip to Japan and Mongolia. But first, before we get into that, the Motorcycle Man podcast is brought to you by Scorpion Helmets. Now they're offering high quality, innovative motorcycle helmets and technical apparel at an incredible value. So to learn more, visit scorpionusa.com. And Wild Ass Seats. You can improve your comfort and ability to stay in the saddle longer with a cushion from Wild Ass Seats. So if you're tired of those painful pressure points and fatigue, go to wild-ass.com and get your cushion today from the real Craig Johnson, and make sure you tell him that the Motorcycle Man podcast sent you. And Tobacco Motorwear, as always, for the best in casual riding gear for men and women. There's only one place you should be going, and that is Tobacco Motorwear. Visit them at tobaccomotorwear.com, and our listeners will get 10% off your order when you use the code MOTOMEN. Now, everyone here at the podcast is wearing tobacco riding jeans and a California riding shirt. We love this stuff. Can't tell you how wonderful these products are. They're just absolutely amazing. I wear them for every ride, and I will not ride without them. Hey, your safety is worth it. So get on over to Tobacco Motorwear and get in Dave's pants. All right, kids, time now for that little interview with Z. Hello, boys and girls, and how y'all doing? Joining me today, what's this, episode 349? No, 439. Got it backwards. We got Z Traveler, motorcycle vagabond traveler and author of Motorcycle Vagabond Epiphanies. Z, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
It's been an adventurous year, and it's a really hot summer this year.
No shit. Yes, it is. Where are you right now? You're home in Tennessee?
I'm in Clarksville, Tennessee. Like, I wouldn't call it home. I call it house. I mean, it's a glorified storage
unit. Your house, right? You're not home, your house.
I mean, it's AJ's house, but, like, we just store stuff here. We come here for repairs, and then, like, otherwise, you know, home is the road. That's where we spend most of our time.
Right. Exactly.
Usually we show up here all beaten and tired and sick and injured, and we spend a few weeks getting everything together to go out again.
Ah, so how you guys been? You've been busy?
Oh, it's super busy. You know, went to HangCon in January, which is the hammock convention in Florida that we really like going to.
A hammock convention?
Yeah, the world's largest hang. That's what they call it. When you get a bunch of hammock campers together, they call it hang.
Really? And it just amazes me that there's a convention surrounded all about hammocks.
It is great, man. Like, I love the people who run it. I've gone 3 years. I don't know. Let me check my wall here. I think it's been 3 years. They're really awesome. They're accepting of motorcyclists. You know, a lot of events, if they're not motorcycle specific, can often have negative bias about us, but they're really awesome people. They do food, and you can meet all kinds of, like, the cottage vendors that make hammock gear in person and, like, talk to their, like, them about their products and try out their products. Like, AJ actually found a hammock this year that doesn't hurt his chest. He broke all his ribs. He had all his ribs broken when he had a heart attack. And so he's got arthritis in his sternum. It was free floating when they were done doing compressions on him. And so he couldn't do a hammock because it kind of pushes your shoulders in a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's this new guy out there from Majestic Hammocks. He made one, and it's, like, sweeping the industry right now. Like, it actually hangs flat. AJ borrowed one for the night from him. He let him use it with an underquilt. And he slept in it all night, and he didn't wake up with pain.
Wow. Who knew that there was such a thing? Wow. How about that, boys
and everyone's like, how do you sew that thing, man? He's like, I don't know. I just make a product.
Oh,
and he's a firefighter. He's a one-man show right now. He's, like, literally the definition of a garage seller or whatever.
Wow. A hammock convention. Who knew? I'm actually going to have to put a link for that in the show notes. There's no question about it. Hey, so listen, so tell us about your latest adventure, because it's a bit different from your previous trips.
So you say that questioningly, like, is it actually different? How many places have you been again? So after Hangon, we went to, we spent 4 weeks in Japan and 6 weeks in Mongolia.
Japan and Mongolia. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we did all of April. Technically, I did my rally in March and went to Big Bend, Texas again. And then in April, we spent it in Japan. And then May and half of June, we spent it in Mongolia.
Oh, wow. So, okay. So how did you get from Japan to Mongolia?
By plane.
By plane. Oh, so you flew. You didn't ride there.
No. No, we're doing fly and ride.
Fly?
So. It's actually a term. I didn't make this up. It's called fly and ride. You know, you just go and you rent a bike and you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. All right. So you started in Japan. Did you ride around Japan?
For the whole 4 weeks.
No way.
We were on 1990s, like 1990 or 91, Kawasaki KLR250s.
Really?
This is a street legal dirt bike with the entire 2x4 right up our ass the entire time.
No. Really?
No storage space, no power, but remarkably nimble, and come to find out you kind of need it in Japan.
No way. That's wow. So how long were you in Japan?
4 weeks in total.
4 weeks total in Japan. Did you tour the entire island?
Okay, there's a lot of islands, and no, man, it takes a long time.
Oh, really?
To go up and down. And we were there too soon. So in April, it's like going to our mountains in April. There's some stuff that was still shut down because of snow. And that was only midway up the big island.
Really?
So, like, we couldn't go much further north than that.
Okay.
It's just too early in the year. But, like, we were there before the season opens. Japanese people take camping very seriously. They book that stuff out, like, a year in advance. Like, they are religious campers. Like, they will go every weekend. They know where they're going. They are so conscientious that they take their ashes from their fire pit home.
What? Really?
Yeah, they will scoop that out and take it and throw it away. So there literally is no trace.
No kidding. Wow. My gosh. Holy crap. How are their campsites there? Are they nice?
So we were there before season. And let me start. Like, this is where the controversial stuff starts. Japanese people very much only like Japanese people.
Okay.
And they in no way cater to a foreigner at all, ever. There's no English speaking. There's no English anything. You just kind of got to make do while you're there.
Okay.
And so even though they have free campsites, I found this blog and I stripped all the GPS coordinates out of it and put it on my Google so I could go to them. You're supposed to actually, like, they're all owned. There's no public land in Japan because it's an island and they're short on space, period.
Right.
It's all owned. But they have free camping sites, but you're supposed to call and reserve them in Japanese, like on the phone.
Oh, wow.
There's not like a website where I could like translate it and be like, I'm going to be there. And it's usually like you got to be a couple days or a week out. Like, you got to know where you're going. And we're like, we have no idea when we're going to stop. We got rained on. Like, there's some days that we're like, oh, I'm just tired of getting beat up by a 2x4. Let's just take the day off. And so that was kind of a pain. So we camped there anyways. And a lot of them we were by ourselves because we were so early in the year.
Right.
And that worked out pretty well. They're very nice. Like, oftentimes you'll see heated toilet seats in public bathrooms. Like, the bathroom experience in Japan is definitely something to experience. Like, most of our rooms had tubs big enough that you could actually get in there and be covered up to your neck. Like, they're kind of more sitting tubs and laying, right, but deep enough that you can get covered. Like, heated toilet seats. There are toilet seats that when you open the door to the toilet area, the seat opens for you.
Oh, boy.
It's like, hello.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Jesus.
So that's quite the experience, but they're very nice. Like, they take good care of the middle of the island. I'd say the one beach we went to was pretty trashy. They don't seem to care about the beaches, but the middle of the island where the mountains are,
yeah,
very cared for. They cut the forest down and then regrow them, so they're like all organized. Like, the trees are kind of straight. It's really creepy. But
that's odd. Wow.
They very much tailor the nature.
Wow. So did they? Well, how did they treat you? Were they nice to you and all that, or?
Japanese people do not talk to strangers.
They don't.
So for people like AJ and I, we are remarkably antisocial for the fact that my career is networking. makes no sense, right?
Right?
But they don't talk to strangers. So occasionally we caught some people taking pictures of the bikes because in Japan, you don't have vehicles older than 10 years on the road because you can't afford to get them registered.
Really?
So they get shipped off to other countries at 10 years old. So almost everything in Japan is brand new. Like, seeing a dent on a car is a remarkable thing, and you will notice it because there's like no dents on cars.
Wow.
And they all drive the rules. Like, they don't speed. They don't do anything weird. Like, the bikes don't lane split. They will sit in traffic and overheat.
Wow.
It's really, it's a strange thing. But as far as the people are concerned, they don't talk to us. They will look for 2 to 3 seconds and then look away because that's the polite amount of time to look at a stranger.
Right.
Service is really good, like very good service. They're very respectful of your privacy. Like, you have, like, a lot of places you have a little button to call them over, or you order online so you don't have to talk to them.
Wow.
Okay, that's interesting. Wow. How was the riding in Japan, though?
Amazing. So, when you think of Japan, what do you think of?
I think of very crowded. I think of everybody. Everything's fast-paced. I think that there's really not a lot of open space, or... Probably the scenery is probably very nice, but it's probably very hectic. That's the imagine. That's what I envision.
So 90% of things that you'll see from Japan in American media is from like Kyoto or Osaka or Tokyo, which are very small areas. Actually, they are very packed and there's a lot of traffic. But the second you leave there, I'm talking mountainous roads. There were days we saw hardly any cars. Like, there was a couple of days that, like, if you saw two cars, that was heavy traffic.
Wow, really? Oh, crap.
Like, gorgeous. Like, we call them national forest roads pretty much, but they're paved, crappily paved. And I'm talking like you're riding along next to creeks and rivers. You're full of forests. Like, the vegetation's all the way up. It's actually pretty amazing. Like, it, holy shit, beautiful. Lots of mountains, lots of twisty roads, just amazing riding in the middle. You got to go through the middle of the islands.
Oh, okay. So did you spend much time? You said you didn't go up north because it was still snowy, right?
So we started in Osaka. That's where we rented. We went south. We went through the middle of the main island in the south part. We went to Hiroshima, and then we crossed over and went to Nagasaki, which is really far away from there. And then we went up to Shikoku, which is like the island of everyone loves it. It costs you $25 to get on the island, $25 to leave the island.
Okay.
It's kind of crazy. But the riding there was amazing. Like, we were having a great time. It's insanely beautiful, not a lot of people there. And then we went north and we did Fuji, and we saw the monkeys with the hot springs, but it was too hot for them to get into the water. And we saw some of the Japanese Alps as well. So we went as far as we could, but there were a lot of passes that were closed due to there was still snow.
Wow. And 4 weeks is coming to an end, and then you suddenly say, hey, let's go to Mongolia.
Yes. So we turned in our 250s and we downsized to 200s in Mongolia. Because that was a great idea. Chinese made even better. These are Shine Ray, it's the brand, and they're called XY200s.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
So 200s. They are 100% worth the $800 they cost new.
Is that one of those you get what you pay for kind of comments?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But they're really great for, like, they really take the beating. Like, I honestly can't complain about them. We were on there for 6 weeks. They were more comfortable than Kawasaki's. Like, okay. We had more storage space and seating space. Like, then the seats were wider for us. So,
okay.
Definitely no complaints there. But, like, they have no power. And they're made of cheap metal.
Mm-hmm. And so you turn the throttle and, like, nothing happens right away. It kind of, like, catches up to it.
Like, 70 kilometers an hour is your, like, highest. 75, maybe. And that's, like, 40, 43 miles an hour, like, at most.
So
that's what you're going to do all day. But it's a great bike. So the nomads, the herders in Mongolia, actually, a lot of them have given up horses for the Shine Rays. I guess they're easier or cheaper to deal with than horses. Also... like, northern Mongolian horses look like they got smashed from both ends and then that they were hit over the head with a brick when they were babies. I don't know if I want to ride one of those things.
Now, so was this a round trip or was this a point-to-point get out?
In Mongolia?
No, just the whole trip. It sounds like you, like, Japan, Mongolia, home. And so it wasn't like, did you go from Japan to Mongolia and then back to Japan?
Just those two countries.
That's it. Okay. So you, through and out, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we can't. Okay. So in Japan, there's nowhere to cross to go to another country. So it's an island. And in Mongolia, we got Russia to the north and China to the south. That's the only two countries that border Mongolia. And yeah, as an American, and especially as AJ's ex-American military, do you really think it's a good idea to go to one of those right now?
No, probably not. You might get a little trouble, you know.
Yeah, and no one to protect you. So we didn't. We would love. We both love to go, just not right now.
Okay. So why Mongolia?
Because they have a 60-foot statue of Genghis Khan.
Oh, okay. That was it?
That's literally all it takes to sign up.
So is that what made you go there? It was just that?
It kind of the start, yeah. We don't have a lot of reason why we go, we just pick. And so Mongolia is amazing. When you go to Mongolia, it's like the great country of Wyoming without fences.
Okay, all right.
So mountainous, it's the steppe, it's desert. And if you're like, hey, that looks pretty cool, I'm going to row right over there. So you just go right over there. Like, you can literally ride anywhere.
Oh, real? Just anywhere?
Anywhere. And, like, navigation's hilarious. It doesn't work. You just kind of get a compass. Like, I had a compass on the front of my bike, and you just kind of point the direction.
So, really, a compass was better than GPS?
Pretty much. I had Google up for some things, but a lot of roads don't exist on Google. You can't update them either. They have a Russian navigation app that they say that you could use there, but I didn't. No thanks.
So where in Mongolia did you start?
So we started in Ulaanbaatar, which is the capital.
Okay.
And we went all the way west. Like, we damn near went into the next country west, like almost to Kazakhstan. And we went to Kuzco, which is their largest lake by volume of fresh water. It's connected to Baikal, which is the world's largest freshwater lake. Okay. We went to the northern route. We had to put our bikes into a truck to go across six rivers. Paid $200,000 for it. That was quite the adventure. We saw the eagle hunters, the people who train eagles to hunt for them during the winter. Oh. Like, we went to their little thing and did that. We went to the Altai Mountains. We rode the two-hump camels, which is the Bactarian, I think. I don't know how to say that properly, but... Only 6% of the camels in the world have two humps, and they're all in, like, Mongolia and Kazakhstan.
Right.
And they're actually winter camels, and I got a picture of one, like, in water. It's, like, the craziest thing to see a camel in water when you only think of desert with camels. So we rode camels. We saw the Gobi Desert. We went and saw some areas where they found... Mongolia is the first place to have found fossilized dinosaur eggs down in the Gobi Desert.
No way. Really?
So we went to that little thing as well. We went to the Altai Mountains, which is a big thing for most people. Super pretty. Just a lot of step riding, really. And then we saw the statue. We went to the black market, which isn't really a black market. It's just a giant ass market.
Now you said you went through what they call the steps, right?
Yes.
Explain that.
So the Mongolian steppe, or the Asian steppe, is grassland. It's essentially an Asian grassland.
Okay.
So, like, it's just giant grazing land. Like, you can't really do much with it. Only 1% of Mongolia is arid enough to grow crops. So the majority of Mongolia is actually just herd land. And it grows enough grass to support. You'll see cows, goats, sheep, and horses, and they eat all of them. Oh, and camels. They eat camels, too.
Okay. So the steppe is just basically just flat land.
Yes.
Pretty much. And I understand. Now, is it like there's multiple steps? Like it goes up in elevation and all that?
Yes. So, like, we would go anywhere between 3,000 and 8,000 or 9,000 feet in a day. And of course, we're going across mountain ranges. There's a lot of mountains. Like, the whole country of Mongolia is mountainous as hell.
Wow. I see. Because I'm actually looking at, while you're talking to me, I'm looking at the map. And I see that a large part of the country is, I'll use the word desert for lack of a better word. It's kind of brown.
Right? Well, it's brown, and it's kind of brown, but it's not flat.
Right.
It's kind of like Nevada in some areas. Like, it does very much get up in elevation, and it snows. It's an amazing place to visit. And, you know, where the funny things start on this trip that I'd like to share.
Sure.
You know, everyone thought Japan was cool, I guess, but, like, Mongolia has put me into this new realm of, like, adventure travelers, I guess. Like, I had a whole bunch of, like, big name people follow me or friend me on Facebook during being in Mongolia. Mm-hmm. I guess this is, like, a major thing, and I'm like, as who I am, as who AJ is, Mongolia is 100% regulated by how well you can protect yourself in dealing with Mother Nature. Like, so you don't trust nomads. I was warned by our rental company to take everything inside the tent or they'll steal it. There's like no police. There's no, like, there might be laws. There's no one to enforce them. You are literally on your own to take care of yourself the entire time.
Wow. Really?
It's remote. And you, like I said, you can go anywhere. You could go days and not see anyone. Or you might see the like herder on his little shine ray pushing his horses and cows across the step, but that's about it. Like, you'll see yurts and stuff, but everyone kind of keeps themselves, or they'll come over and like awkwardly hang around. They're very nosy.
Oh, wow. Now, well, so I saw some of your posts on Facebook. You obviously did a lot of camping, obviously. Now, were you following any roads, or were you just like on just land and just going?
So I actually bought a map from the state store when we got there. The State Department store is where you can get all your cool Mongolia crap.
Okay.
And they have everything there. So I bought one there, and that's actually what we use to navigate more often than Google. Like, we kind of compared the two, but the map was accurate. It's accurate from last year. So they had some new paved roads. There's like a paved road that goes from Ulaanbaatar across the middle of the country. Then there's a paved road from Ulaanbaatar through down to the Altai and to all the way to the end there. And then there's a paved road down to the Gobi. So we did some of those paved roads, and then we did dirt roads connecting it and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, dirt roads, like, Mongolians are the king of, I don't like that trail, I'm gonna make another one.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, you'll come over a hill and you'll see it, and I posted pictures of it, and you'll see literally 20 tracks all going the same direction.
Oh, that's funny. Wow.
They're just like parallel little tracks, and they're like, oh, that one's gotten too washboardy, I'm gonna make another one.
How much planning did you put into this trip, especially the Mongolia part?
The extent of our planning is usually just like, when's the best time of weather? So we chose to go to Mongolia when it's colder, versus their summer where there's monsoon season and everything turns to mud. And I'd rather cold and dry than warm and wet, especially when we're off road.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
So pretty much the only planning is the timing, how long we're going to be there, and then everything else we just figure out along the way.
Wow.
Like, no. It's usually like a list of interests. Like, I like natural stuff, like the national park, the desert. We wanted to ride a camel. We wanted to see the statue, which was like one of the last things we did. And, you know, there's a few things we wanted to do, but it was a short list, and we just kind of like figured out things along the way and tried to get as many of those into it as possible.
Wow. Now, as far as you're traveling, how did you manage the communication aspect? Because it's all Cyrillic over there, right?
Yeah, it's a weird, like, Mongolian's a weird bastardization of Cyrillic and Latin. So it's like, there's some Latin letters and there's some Cyrillic, but it all leads to, you can't read it. I don't know what sound to make for that thing. That's cool.
But were you able to communicate with some people?
No.
No, really? Wow.
So, well, we're not social to begin with, right. But not a lot of cell service out in the steppe to start with, so you can't do like the talk to your phone and communicate. That has to have cell service. You can do typing offline, but not the voice. It just doesn't translate well. Like, yeah. Google Lens doing a menu, it'll say the weirdest shit, man. And you're like, I have no idea what I'm ordering. I have no idea what I'm translating. Like, you kind of just have to guess. And it's not even close. Like, it doesn't even get close to going to English.
Well, did you buy SIM cards for Mongolia?
I bought one, and then AJ's got, and I have the international plan with Verizon, and he's got an international plan with AT&T.
Okay. So your cell phones worked when you had service, right?
Yeah, they worked. Like, weirdly enough, most of the little villages where you'll get gas, and that's the number one question I got, is like, how did you get gas? You know, we've got tiny bikes. There are enough villages along the way, you just have to aim for them.
Okay.
So you can get gas. And every one of them has gas. Like, there's this one that we went through. It took them, like, 10 minutes to get the generator started to get the pump to work.
Oh, boy.
They didn't have power in the village. The only thing that had power was the generator to the pump, so they could have gas.
Wow. Wow, that's weird. I'm surprised. And I imagine at some point you did get gas out of plastic bottles, right?
No, yeah, we got it from gas stations.
Oh, no kidding. Really? Oh, wow. Because I did see a lot in other videos I've seen that. So now, would you say it was mostly camping?
I think we did about, technically, I think we stayed more in hotels.
Really?
Because we would get them We had a lot of bad weather, so we would get them for a couple days. And, like, we got stuck 5 days in Bolgan, the capital of the province, Bolgan, because it snowed again. Really? And we're like, it's fucking cold out there. Let's not ride.
Wow. Holy crap. Now, how was the lodging?
Like, as far as, unique places to stay, I think we camped more.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
Yeah. So, more camping sites, but more days in hotels, just multiple days in hotels.
So, it was just wild camping, actually.
So if you want to go camping in Mongolia, you're like, that's a nice spot, and then you put your tent there.
Really? That's right. So there's no thought about it, right? There's no campsites. It's just
wherever you want.
We're done. Like, we're done for the day, and that's it.
And oddly enough, you think that there'd be a lot of human poop around, and there's not. So they actually tell people when they come to Mongolia to poop in the marmot holes or the mouse like hole, like find ones that aren't being used, like that aren't active holes, and like use those as a toilet. So you never see human poop. I tell you what, though, there is animal poop all over that country, and it smells.
Really?
Like, I never really thought about it. Like, if you think about the Wild Wild West, when there was, you know, we used to do stamp, like, when you move the herd animals, the cows across the country. You don't really think about it, but, like, now that I saw Mongolia, there's poop everywhere.
Wow.
And it smells. And that's how the Wild West had to have been, you know?
Yeah. Poop everywhere.
Everywhere. Oh, and you're the whole time you're riding off road, you're like, is that a poop or is that a rock? I'll ride over the poop. I don't want to ride over the rock.
Wow. Oh my God. That must have been horrible. How are the people though? Are they okay to you or?
Like I said, very nosy. So in Japan where they respected the privacy, in Mongolia, we would have people come over, like two or three people, and they would stay around for 20 minutes talking to each other and laughing, even though they knew we don't speak Mongolian.
Right, of course.
They would touch all of our stuff on our bikes. Like, we got to where we started yelling at people because they wouldn't leave us alone. I had people on motorcycles try to get up close to me and make shitty faces at me because women don't ride motorcycles out in the steppe. Like, I never even saw women out in the steppe. I think they were forced to stay in the yurt.
Wow. Oh, man. What'd you guys do about food?
Sausage and crackers a lot. We did take camping gear, cooking gear, camp cook gear. We'd buy like cans of beans, and then we have the sausage. They sell sausage in every little town. There's always a little market because they got to eat too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So they have a really nice selection of various sausages that would survive well in the bike. Crackers, we found a bottle of mustard because that's what we like. And then when you eat in restaurants, like if you're in a town or you get a hotel, pretty good food actually. Yeah. So long as you like grilled meat, that's a very meat heavy country.
Okay. Wow. So if you're a vegetarian, you're out of luck.
In England, there's like a couple of vegetarian restaurants. The rest of the country, LOL. They have salad everywhere. We ate a lot of salad in Mongolia, okay. Which is surprising.
Right. Yeah.
Because they don't grow their own vegetables and everything's imported.
Yeah. Did you run across any wildlife or anything like that while you were there?
Marmots. I killed a few field gerbils with my bike.
Field gerbils?
They look like field mice. I think they're actually gerbils. And when you're riding across the steppe,
yeah,
if you ride between them and their hole, they will straight line to their hole because, you know, there's hawks. There's lots of birds in Mongolia.
Okay. Wow.
And so they'll run straight for their hole. And if you're going fat, like I intersected them quite a few times. And AJ's like, you know, you like half ran over like three gerbils today. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do, man?
Oh, my God. But for the most part, all of Mongolia, how was the weather? It was cold, obviously, you said.
It's very diverse.
Really?
Like, you'll go down, you'll get hot, you'll go up, you'll get cold. We had anything between 20 and 80 degrees. We got lots of rain. It's remarkably dry in lots of areas. Like, we had everything.
Yeah. What was some of your...
Constantly, like, taking clothes on and off. By the way, yak pants. They sell yak pants.
Yak in pants?
It's yak wool. I call them yak pants. Like thermals, like under roofs.
Okay, all right.
Whatever you call them. They're really good. Like, their winter clothes are legit.
Yak pants.
Yak pants.
I like that. That's gonna be. We got to make that a thing. Yak pants.
Yes, yak pants. I got yak pants. So I bought some of those to start with. They were great. They were better than my merino wool, honestly.
Did you bring any of those back?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then I got some more before we left. And I got like 16 pairs of yak socks.
Yak socks.
Because they're only $3 a pair, man. How
yak,
can I
yak pants, yak socks. More? Any yak shirts?
No, they didn't have any that I don't know what under, like, you know how we layer the thermals underneath and then close and then they don't do that there. So like, I just found yak leggings, I guess, but they didn't have
yak leggings.
Shirt things.
It's like, I don't know. So they're yak yoga leggings, right?
Kinda, yeah.
How about yak jackets?
No, but they have a lot of Mongolians still wear the traditional Mongolian robes. It's actually, and I'm going to show you, and no one's going to be able to see this. Oh,
oh dear. I think it's huge.
So this is actually a traditional color, too.
The thing is huge.
It is. So this thing goes from neck to ankle. It's quilted, and it's like, it doesn't, it's huge. It's very thick. It's very warm. I wanted a winter one to wear when I go outside to, in the winter when I'm in Tennessee. Like, I'm not going to wear it very much, but I'm like, that's what I want as a souvenir right there, is a traditional Mongolian robe.
How did you carry that on the bike?
I got it at the very end.
Oh, the very end. Okay.
All
right.
And we sit at all our shopping. Like, there's not a lot of shopping options along the way. Yeah, most of my souvenirs from Mongolia are cool rocks I found when I was peeing. I'd be peeing, and I'm like, oh, that's a pretty rock that I'm looking at. Like,
thanks for sharing.
So I have a jar of, like, Gobi sand, pretty rocks, and a couple, like, various bones. Oh, you'll see skulls and bones everywhere.
Really? That must have been creepy.
It's cool. I mean, you know, things die.
Yeah, well, I suppose. Did you have a favorite part of the ride, either Japan or Mongolia?
Japan would be Shikoku. That island was amazing. Mongolia, man. My favorite part, and it was the like, I'm having this shit fit of a day. Like, it's called the Northern Route in English, but it connects the two paved roads at the very far west part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And on Google and maps, it shows a road there. And that's where you find out there's six rivers that you cannot cross on a motorcycle. And by the way, we had to do a lot of river crossings. Like, AJ and I did not want to do river crossings at all, but we eventually had to. We got okay at it.
Yeah.
We didn't drop the bike or anything. But, you know, you learn to ford them. You know, you get off your bike, take your boots off, and go walk and make sure they're not, you know, too deep. They will randomly get deep. But the land's mostly flat, so the rivers do all kinds of weird shit. But the Northern Route, it was my favorite because there wasn't a lot of nomads or herders there.
Right.
It was very diverse. And then I got a flat. AJ threw a chain and I got a flat. And so we're in the middle of this route and end up pinching the tube. So he goes a few kilometers forward, and apparently there was a village we were about to get to before I got this flat. He gets another one, we make it work. And then that's when we found out we couldn't cross the river. And we had tried to cross the river. We'd gone through like this horrible rock field and all this stuff, but like, that was like my favorite part. And I'm over here like, why the fuck am I having a good time? I am so tired right now, and I hurt. This has been bullshit, and I'm miserable, and the weather sucks, and there's a storm coming, and this is amazing. And I'm just like ranting at AJ. I'm just like, this is ridiculous that I like this. I must be a stupid masochist.
You know, it's weird because I, you know, when I look at the map, you know, you can see on the map that they show where there's a river. But then when you do street view, and you can do street view, there's nothing there. There is no river. So
Mongolia changes a lot.
So it's like,
even on their maps, they don't do rivers because they change a lot. Like, depending what time of year you go, they may not even be running.
Okay, so like right now, I'm looking at a street view, and I'm on the road, and according to the map view,
you're right in the middle of a river.
The river is like right there. It's right next to it. But there's no river.
It's not accurate. Like, if you're, and I'm really into navigating and making sure that I know where I'm going, it's a little nerve wracking. Mongolia is not up to date maps or anything. You just have to just see it for yourself.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
times that like Google's like, oh, this is a river, and we're like riding right down the middle on a paved road, and there's no water in sight.
Yeah, because I'm looking at this and it the map, and it makes it look like, well, that's a pretty wide river right there, and you got bridges and stuff like that. And then you do the street view, and you go like, this looks nothing like what the map view shows.
I was like, what? Yeah, you get used to that.
Really? Oh, man. How was, you know, I've heard stories of
the driving habits of these people there? And is it true what they everybody says that they just make up their own rules?
There are no rules. So Japan, where everyone follows the rules, like literally, like there are no cops out in the middle of Japan because everyone follows the laws.
Right.
And then you go to Mongolia and there are no rules. Wow. It is a total opposite. Like our rental company actually did not want us riding in Ulaanbaatar, but we were trying to get stuff done and we wanted our bikes so we could get around town.
Right.
You can't do the bus system in Mongolia unless you get a special card, and that's just a pain in the ass. But apparently people wreck in Ulaanbaatar a lot. Honestly, if you've ridden in India or Central America or even Thailand, Mongolia is pretty similar. Like, I wouldn't say it's as aggressive as India. It's got its own flavor.
Yeah.
Like, they just like, float across the lanes a lot and whatnot. They do respect lights because in Ulaanbaatar, there are cops that actually direct almost all day. So that's about the only thing they respect. In the other little villages, traffic's actually quite normal. Like, everyone's...
Okay.
It's just Ulaanbaatar is crazy. Everyone speeds. they don't like motorcyclists at all.
Really?
So they have no regard for you or disregard for you.
Wow.
It's not that bad, honestly. Like, I didn't have that much of an issue with it. But I did India last year, so...
Why?
I mean, dude, AJ wanted to see where the first recorded use of zero was. That's why we went to India for 8 weeks. I don't have a lot of reason why we go. It's just like, oh, that's good enough.
All right. Did you have a least favorite the worst moment that you like really hated where you were?
I feel like that every time I'm in major populations, honestly.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
I don't like traffic. And Japan, like, I was telling you earlier, I don't think I ever finished this. Japan's an easy country to navigate. Most people don't find Japan to be adventurous because it's developed. It's the first, they call it first world. That's not even a term. It's a developed nation.
Right. Of course.
So everything's paved. There's services. There's gas stations. There's refrigeration. You know, it's very predictable. I found Japan harder than Mongolia personally, but I got a lot of I guess a lot of people started following me because of Mongolia. I guess it's crazy and wild, and I earned the respect of real adventure riders for doing it. And I'm like, I actually find Mongolia easier as a person because I love camping. I do a lot of, you know, education and practice on survival and, you know, learning how to, like, we know how to take care of ourselves. We know how to fight. We know how to wrench our own bikes. You know, we know how to set camp. We know what to do in emergency situations. Like, there was one night we got hit by a storm, and there's no shelter in Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
The wind was so bad. Like, there was sand around us, and the wind was so bad, the sand was coming up into the tent and underneath the rain fly.
Wow.
So, like, we were dry, but we were, like, the whole tent got filled with sand. And, of course, it smells like, you know, animal piss because it's so everywhere. It just smells like that everywhere. All of our gear still smells. We got to wash it before we head out this year. But like, you know, the wind's blowing real bad. So like, we're sitting there, we're still in our gear because it's not clean inside the tent anymore. And we're just, you know, waiting it out pretty much, making sure the tent doesn't bend and then knowing that we've got a repair kit if it does.
Right.
You know, and just it's really just take care of your own. Like, we were very good at that situation, whereas in Japan everything is regulated and we don't do well with rules and laws and lack of open space and having a hard time finding a place to camp, and hotel rooms are so expensive in Japan. Oh,
really?
$75 minimum most of the time, unless you go to a love hotel, but those are sketchy because they often, there are laws in some areas that they lock you in and you have to be buzzed out.
What? They lock you in the hotel room?
Yes. It's called a love hotel. In Japan, a lot of young couples live with their parents, so they have very cheap and affordable love hotels, and they're really nice, too. Like, we're talking, like, themed rooms. The places will do, like, various cities around the world.
Wow, really?
You have lots of, like, foot massager and a nice, you know, big shower and a tub, because young couples don't have privacy living with their parents. A lot of young couples can't afford to do that, like move out until their 30s or 40s.
Wow.
So they go regularly, so they're very affordable. Some of them are very nice. So like some of them we were given keys or whatever. And then some of them we got locked in. I mean, they were all nice. It's just we don't like getting locked in. That makes it very...
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Kind of bizarre. Odd.
But those could be $30 to $40 a night. Normal hotels were like 75 and up.
Did you take any hotels while you were in Mongolia?
Yes. Yeah, yes, we did do a lot of hotels. Most of the major cities or towns will have hotels. Like, we got one in Muron. That's the town that serves Kuzgo. So we got that for two nights, left all our stuff, rode to the lake, and then rode back down.
Yeah. How was that? Hotels all right?
Yeah, they're pretty good. We had some that were, they would have been like a $300 hotel in the U.S.
Really?
Okay. And it was like $75.
Wow.
And then, like, the quality of hotel was very price dependent in Mongolia. So, like, two gricks, it's like $3,500 to $1. So, the cheapest hotel is like $90,000. We didn't do any hostels. We like private spaces.
Yeah.
And you can get cheaper if you want to share rooms, do dorms, or whatever.
Right.
And we like to have a private bathroom too. We don't like shared bathrooms. So, we're $90,000 is about the minimum there, all the way up to $250,000, $269,000, I think, was the most expensive. And that's like $80.
Wow. Okay.
So down at the lower end, you've got like sketchy, sometimes the fixtures are missing, or there's exposed wires, or you might get electrocuted when you shower.
Nice.
You
know, little things like that.
the bed's hard, or, you know, things are slightly broken, or the floor is fucked up. So, like, lower quality there, some areas, that's the best you're going to get. That's like the nicest hotel we got.
Wow, man.
And then you go all the way up to like marble floors and, you know, like
top quality private stuff.
Yeah, like, it's crazy. And some fine dining restaurants we went to that were all like business professional Mongolians and like the high end tour companies.
Right.
And we're just sitting there like, here's my $30 meat tray for 3 to 4 people with ribs and all the good bits on it. Like, it's crazy. And we're just like, hey, order whatever we want. It's cheap.
Oh my God.
And Mongolia still has a lot of communism in their culture, and I don't think they even know that. Like, they're not communists now,
right?
But in communism, there's no capitalism in, you know, marking things up depending on how hard it is to get it.
Right.
So we paid the same price for gas across the whole country, no matter how remote.
Really?
We paid the same price for food throughout the whole country, no matter how remote. Like, no matter how hard it is for them to get supplies, it's like consistently across the board, which is kind of cool.
Oh wow, it's pretty neat. Wow. Okay, who knew? So, how many all total? How many days or weeks or however you want to do it, were you gone, and how many miles did you do?
It was 10 weeks in total.
Okay.
So like 2.5 months, and I will have to pull up my mileage thing here. It was 2,727 miles in Japan in 31 days. And 3,728 miles in Mongolia in 41 days.
Wow. So you're like, you're well over 5,000 miles on that trip.
A little over six.
A little over 6,000 miles. And, wow.
And it sounds like a lot, but like, there's a lot of times that we couldn't pass, like, a 200 kilometer day was a big day in Mongolia.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes a long time to get anywhere, and you ride all damn day to do it.
How were the roads? Were the roads any decent in Mongolia? If there were roads.
So in Mongolia is where I learned to, like, 8 million ways to define an off-road. So you've got like small gravel with bedrock on the bottom. You got small gravel with sand. You've got large gravel. You got large gravel on bedrock. You've got the step that's flat. Then you got the step with the crevices that you got to make sure you don't fall into. Then you got the tufts of grass that you do not want to fuck with, because if you hit those things, they will like throw you off your bike.
Really?
Then you've got sand, like the Gobi. You've got nice pavement that's just finished last year, so really good condition. You got pavement with potholes big enough to lose your bike in. You've got dirt roads that are actually quite pleasant and smooth. So, like, all kinds of varieties of roads in Mongolia.
So, yeah, very varied terrain, and you have to be prepared for just about anything. So what did you learn on this trip? What did you learn from Ron? Whatever you had, what did you learn?
Japan actually taught me that no matter how considerate you want to be as a traveler in other countries, you will always be an asshole for being there.
Oh, wow.
Okay. You will never understand their culture enough. And even if you try, you're still a foreigner. So really just have fun and don't worry about how everyone hates you, because that's just how it's going to happen.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Seriously. Like, seriously, that's what I learned in Japan as a personal thing. And I also learned Japan's quite mountainous and much more beautiful than I expected, and very remote.
Oh, wow. Good.
How about and that? In Mongolia? What did I learn? I learned how to cross rivers.
You learned how to cross rivers. and that there's a lot of poop.
A lot of poop. And I guess I could tell you the difference between like goat, sheep, beef, and horse flavored meat without knowing what meat it is.
Wow. Oh, boy. Okay, then. So what's next for you?
We're going to go down in, we're looking at January, February. We're going to go down to Colombia and buy motorcycles and store them there.
And that's it? You're just going to go buy motorcycles in Colombia?
We're going to go every year for the next probably 3 years, you know, 3 to 5 months at a time, and ride South America.
Oh, you're going to go into South America. Okay, I see.
Colombia, the country.
Yeah, okay, okay. All right. So that's
your. That's the one country we were told that you can buy bikes as a foreigner and register them. So you can, a funny thing that you guys should know, you can buy a vehicle in almost any country. Registering it is where your problem starts.
Really?
Yes. And a lot of countries require you to have like a work visa or some kind of like temporary residency visa to register. Okay. So when you're looking to buy a bike foreign, you either have to know someone that's willing to help you and register it for you, or give you a room rental agreement or something to be able to be legal. Colombia, you have to buy them new, but you can actually register them as a foreign national without this paperwork. So we're going to go down there, get that set up. We're getting Royal Enfields, the 411s, because we like those.
Okay.
We did those in India. And then we're going to find storage unit, and then we're going to actually have bikes in North America and in South America, so we can ride here when it's nice, there when it's nice. And the future plan would be probably add some bikes into like Cambodia, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Or even Mongolia. Like, we do plan to go back to Mongolia.
Oh, you do?
We love Mongolia. That's our number one return country at this point, just because it's so... I actually, about a week into it, we were out on the steppe. And I had this massive, like, this is what freedom feels like. I have never felt more free on a motorcycle, or more free in general, than in Mongolia. Like, literally, anything you want to do is there. You can go anywhere you want. You can ride anywhere you want. You can camp anywhere you want. Like, it's just a mate. It's open. Like, if you're agoraphobic, you'd hate it. But if you're not scared of open spaces and you're okay being on your own and being alone, like, it's silent. It's quiet. There's, like, no power lines. There's no human-made anything. Just, like, it's free. It's freedom. It's the most freedom I've ever felt. And wow. We want to go there and buy Shine Rays and store them there as well.
Oh, there you go. All right. Now with Colombia... are you going to be venturing beyond Colombia while you're down there, or is it just going to be hanging out in Colombia? Because it's a big country.
It depends on how long it takes us to get the bikes bought and set up.
All right.
We definitely want to stay long enough to do the first break-in service before we store them.
Okay.
You know, do your 1,000-mile or whatever oil change and get everything freshened up. We might just stay in Colombia to start with. It depends on how long we're able to stay. If not, we'll probably go to some, surrounding countries. Right now, we're trying, like, the first few trips, we're going to try to return to Colombia for storage, but we also know that eventually we may have to leave them. Like, if you go to Brazil or Argentina or Chile, you're pretty far away from Colombia, and we don't want to have to, like, round trip every time.
Right,
so we might have to leave them to other countries and find other storage.
Right.
Temporarily.
All right.
We'll figure it out. It's just, there's a big issue taking your own bike from the States.
Yeah.
There's only so long you're allowed to leave them in other countries, temporary import permits. And we don't want to be timed. You know, we want to go down there when the weather's nice. We don't want to ride monsoon season. We don't want to ride in the winter when it's snowy and shit.
Do they have that problem in Colombia? I didn't think they had snow and stuff in Colombia. Maybe
no,
the higher elevations, probably. Yes, I could see that. But.
Well, the rest of the country, or west of the continent, I should say, too. Yeah. Like, we're going to go to Chile. We're going to go to Argentina, where there's...
I've heard a lot of interesting things about Chile. That's good. Oh, awesome. That's great. So how can people learn more about you and your trip?
So you'd have to go to Facebook and find me as Z Traveler and go back through my posts. I do intend to make a little booklet in the future and a quick guide for going to Mongolia on my website, ztraveler.com. It's a mess right now. It's not up yet, but that'll be in the future. Yeah, besides that, just follow me on Facebook. Oh, and I also post on Instagram now. I now post equally on Instagram and Facebook, so you can catch them on both.
Excellent. Any advice to those who might want to visit Japan and Mongolia?
Budget a lot for Japan. I hope you like seafood, and it's really amazing and cheap there. The rentals can be expensive, too, unless you find these specific Kawasaki's that we rented from this specific company. in Mongolia, come prepared. A lot of stuff's not available for sale there. Like, we showed up intending to buy camp cook stuff and whatnot. You can find fuel. That's not a problem. But bring your own, like, pots, pans, stove, and every bit of camping gear you think you're going to need, except for, like, you could buy clothes because yak pants are great.
Yak pants. But
they have a lot of the same brands that we have here in the States, but it's imported and costs just as much or more.
All right. All right. Well, Z, listen, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you when we're done. But that's it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy sharing my adventures with you.
Great. Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
The Motorcycle Man Podcast is supporting David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. If you would like to help and be a part of something that makes a difference, donate today to David's Dream and Believe Cancer Foundation. Go to davidsdreamandbelieve.org to donate. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the website. And the Gold Star Ride Foundation, helping families of fallen soldiers and making a difference in the lives of those left behind. So if you'd like to be a part of a great cause and get some heartfelt miles in, go to goldstarride.org and learn how you can participate in the next Gold Star Ride. Hey, thanks for joining me and Z here in the V-Twin Cafe, where she told us about her trip to Mongolia and Japan. Now, you can learn more about Z by getting over to ztraveler.com. Links will be in the show notes and, of course, on the Motorcycle Men website at motomenpc.com. Hey, don't forget to get over to the Ride with Ted YouTube channel and watch some of the many videos I have there. And if you would please also like and subscribe, that would be a tremendous help to the channel and, of course, to the podcast. Hey, listen, get your copy of my book, The Road Most Traveled, now direct from me on the Motorcycle Men website. That's right. You can save nearly $8. And of course, it is still available on Amazon, and you can still get it from me if you want, and I can even sign it for you. Don't forget, you can also get the audiobook. It's over at audible.com, and it's on a bunch of other sites too, that places where you might get your audiobook. So don't forget to check that out. All right, kids, for the rest of the Motorcycle Men team, thanks for listening. And remember, we say stupid crap so you don't have to. Ride safe, kids.